I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile. Those wonderful words of Rabbi Paul of Tarsus, better known as the Apostle Paul. And that's how you know that you've tuned in to a lovely Thursday sunny afternoon edition of Jesus Made Me Kosher. Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael. We're your friendly neighborhood Messianic synagogue, and everybody is welcome. Nobody gets carded on the way in. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. We encourage you to go there and find some great articles, also sound files of some of Rabbi Lauren's sermons. And we want to say that we're coming to you live today from the spacious and congenial studios of Faith Talk 1500. Rabbi Glenn in and here with you today. So glad that you could join us this beautiful sunny afternoon. And I've got a very special guest with us today, somebody I really like. And of course, that's what really matters, right? But somebody who's a real nice guy, great guy, and a friend, albeit fairly new friend, and his name is Randy Newman. And Randy works for CRU, formerly known as Campus Crusade for Christ. I don't know how CRU is supposed to necessarily communicate, but that's a whole nother story. But Randy, it's so good to have you with us, and welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
It's great to be with you, Glenn. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, it was fun last fall to be breaking bread with you and cracking jokes with you at the Jews for Jesus Midwest Conference. And so it's a delight to have you on the show today, and wanted to ask you some questions, want to talk about the books that you've written about sharing the gospel. But in addition to that, just like to hear your story. So if you don't mind, let me start out this way. As a young man from a Jewish upbringing, how did the God of Israel reveal himself to you in the person of Yeshua the Messiah? In other words, how has Jesus made you kosher?
I like that phrase. Well, do you want the 3-minute version, the 30-minute version, the 3-hour version?
Oh, there's nothing between 3 minutes and 30 minutes? Come on, I thought you were a flexible kind of guy.
All right. Well, yeah, I grew up in what I would consider sort of a typical American Jewish home. My family was very strongly Jewish in our identity, but not necessarily all that much with our religious faith. My family went to synagogue sometimes, a couple of times a year, particularly Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But my parents did send me and my two brothers to Hebrew school, and so we had a pretty thorough Jewish education. And then leading up to my bar mitzvah, I really started taking Judaism quite seriously and really was looking for some sort of spiritual larger answers to things rather than just, you know, get a good job, make money, and, you know, be successful. And so I really was kind of searching to try to figure out how to know this God in a personal way, but he always seemed so distant and alien. And it didn't help that I thought I had to speak to him in Hebrew. I mean, you know, that wasn't my first language. And so I really tried to fulfill all of the different aspects of Judaism to make a connection with God. And I remember quite vividly when I was 15 on Yom Kippur, I decided I was going to get everything right. I was going to fast. I wasn't going to drive in the car. I was going to go to all the synagogue services on Erev Yom Kippur and the whole day and confess all the sins and beat my chest, you know, as part of the pounding my breast with repentance of sin. And as I was walking home from the synagogue and the sun is setting, I remember thinking, God doesn't seem any closer now than 24 hours ago. And I couldn't figure out why that was until I looked down at my shoes, and I was dressed up for Yom Kippur. I was wearing a suit and tie and dress shoes. And then I remembered the rabbi taught that you're not supposed to wear dress shoes. You're not supposed to wear leather shoes. I never quite found out why. I don't know why. But I thought, oh, I wore the wrong shoes. That's why it didn't work. I guess I'll have to try again next year. Like, I don't know, the eternal Chicago Cubs fan or something. Wait till next year. Apologies to Cubs fans. Sorry. I remember thinking, oh, I got to go through this all again next year and get it right, and I hope I remember the right shoes then. And then I thought, wait a minute, that's just the stupidest thing in the world. You got to be kidding me. That's how you get to know God, by remembering all of these millions of rules and do this, don't do that, and wear the right shoes. And I thought, there's got to be some other way. There's got to be some other way to know this God.
Well, things really accelerated, if I'm remembering correctly, in your sophomore year of college.
Right. Before that, I met a whole group of Christians. They invited me down to their church youth group. And then I met, you're right, then another group of Christians when I was in sophomore year of college. And both groups really did know God in a personal way. And that was so attractive to me. In fact, I actually got jealous of the fact that these goyim knew the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob better than I did. But they really did. They prayed about everything. They prayed in English. They prayed in their own words. They didn't worry about what kind of shoes to wear.
It didn't hurt that there were pretty girls either, right?
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's what my friend who invited me to the church youth group, that's what he said. The girls are cute, and he was right. So that's what kept me going. But that's what started me wrestling with, well, what is it that these people believe that I don't, or what do they have that I don't? And that started a long process of reading the New Testament, especially the Gospel of Matthew. I also read C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity, and I found that Jesus was exactly who he said he was. I mean, I always thought Jesus was, you know, just going to be a nice teacher who said some good things about love your neighbor. But he really said some really extreme, radical things about himself, that he was God himself, that God took on human flesh in the person of Yeshua, and that he was the one who fulfilled all of the prophecies of the Tanakh, and he was the one who came to unite people with God because of his atonement and his death. He was the ultimate Passover sacrifice. He was the ultimate Yom Kippur sacrifice. And that's when it became real to me that I could know God, that it didn't have to be this distant, alien, kind of foreign thing.
So for you, is it safe to say it was a little bit of the Berean approach? You know, in fairness, you determined that whoever this Jesus was, clearly he was important enough that you ought to at least read the gospel and see what he had to say.
Right. It was very much the Berean approach, as you say. It was very much reading this book and saying, okay, let me not prejudge the book, and let me really try to see what it says. Let me let it judge, you know, be on its own terms. But there was also, I don't know what you'd call an emotional component or an experiential component, because in the middle of my sophomore year in college, this friend of mine died in this really tragic accident. And up until that point, the first year and a half of college, I would say that I was very absurd. I watched a lot of Woody Allen movies and drank a lot of beer, and I just thought life was a big joke and an absurd, meaningless joke. But when this friend of mine died, I remember sitting at his funeral. I could still remember it. I mean, that's over 30 years ago. I could still remember it pretty vividly, that I need to get some answers. I need to find out how to make sense. I don't think life is just pointless and crazy and meaningless. If it is, then there's no basis for hope and beauty and all sorts of things that I did find in life that I liked. So it was a combination of the intellectual thing and this emotional thing. But when I read the New Testament, it all came together. I saw that the New Testament is a very Jewish book, far more Jewish than I had expected it to be.
Mm. So you were about how old at the point where you recognized that Yeshua was the Messiah and then made your commitment, surrendered, if you will, to him?
Yeah. Well, I was 20, because I know it was in the spring semester of my sophomore year. So it might have even been very, very close to my birthday, because my birthday is in the spring. So both my physical birthday and my spiritual birthday coincided 20 years apart.
Ah, and so you were 20, so that means 9 years ago, right?
You know, it feels like a longer time than that.
Oh, okay. Now, Randy, you've served in many different capacities. You've ministered actually even in the Pentagon, and for something like over 25 years, I guess. Could you tell us how you moved from being simply a believer, a follower of Yeshua, to then dedicating your whole life to represent him.
Mm, sure. Oh, by the way, the Pentagon stint was only about 5 or 6 years. but I've been in ministry in one form or another for over 30 years. So let's see, I graduated from college, and so I had known the Lord at that point for only a couple of years. But I volunteered with the campus ministry there at Temple University in the heart of Philadelphia. And I was a music major, and so I got a couple of jobs as teaching music and playing in music groups. But what I found to be far more enjoyable and rewarding, and more, I think, for who the way God wired me, was the Bible studies and things I was doing with ministry on campus. So I kind of put the music on the back burner, so to speak, and I joined the staff of this group called Campus Crusade. And, yeah, that's brought us to a whole bunch of different campuses, even have traveled overseas and spoken on some campuses in Australia and Scotland. And now we've been in the Washington, D.C. area for over 20 years doing campus ministry, and Washington, D.C. is loaded with all sorts of different kinds of schools. I serve mostly at George Mason University, which is one of the most ethnically and religiously diverse campuses in the world. It's pretty amazing.
And I'm sure you have lots of opportunity, you know, as, you know, though there are more Jewish people following Yeshua today than perhaps at any time in history, we are still a bit of a novelty. So I suppose that opens a certain amount of doors for you. People are curious how, as a Jewish person, you came to believe.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, in particular, working for an organization that has called itself a crusade, you know.
It's so Yiddish, right? It's like, so Yiddish, Campus Crusade for Christ.
What's a nice Jewish boy like you doing in a Campus Crusade? I don't know. So, yes, it does prompt some very good discussions. Sometimes it prompts some hot discussions, but, you know, so what else is new, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine that, Jewish people being emotional? Huh, when did that happen?
Who ever heard of such a thing? Well, Randy, you wrote a book entitled Questioning Evangelism, which, of course, doesn't mean exactly necessarily what it sounds like it means. You're not questioning the validity or the importance of evangelism. But something that took place between you and your mother actually began a process, if I remember right, that prompted the writing of this book, Questioning Evangelism. Could you tell us that story?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, you know, for a while I would teach students, and I would also be speak at conferences or whatever about how to talk to Jewish people. And I said, you know, with Jewish people, it's good to answer a question with a question, because that's what Jewish people do. Why? How could you not answer a question with a question? You know, I remember talking to my grandmother once. Grandma, how's the weather? She said, how could the weather be in Florida? And that's how Jewish people answer questions. But some people started saying to me, you know, I think this kind of works not just with Jewish people, but with all sorts of people, that if you answer a question with a question, or if you ask questions, you draw people out, you engage them in the thinking process rather than just, you know, dumping an answer in their lap. So I had tried witnessing a whole lot to my parents over the many years, and nothing really got through until... I'd sent them books and videos and all sorts of stuff.
And got some of them back in the mail. I know that feeling, right?
Well, no,
I know the feeling.
Got sent back, but I think a whole lot of them just collected dust or got thrown out or, you know, hidden deep in the basement. But one day my mother was talking to me on the phone, and she was telling me about a funeral that she had gone to. And I knew the man who died. He had actually taught in the high school I went to. And he was a very bitter man, a very angry, sarcastic man. He was an atheist. He made fun of people of all sorts of faiths, not just Christians. He didn't have any time for anything to do with religion at all. And it's really very tragic. Nothing ever turned around for him. He died a pretty angry, bitter man. And my mother said to me on the phone, well, at least now he's in a better place. And I remember thinking, I'm not so sure about that, Mom. You know, because he really didn't believe and didn't want anything to do with God. So why would God bring him into his presence? And so I said to my mother, I was ready to preach a whole sermon to my mother on the phone, but instead I asked her a question. And I said, well, Mom, how do you know that? And there was this long pause. And eventually she said, how do I know what? I said, how do you know he's in a better place? Because at that point, I think my mother's religious beliefs were everybody goes to a better place. Everybody, every religion is the same. Every religion works. Everybody goes to heaven. And, you know, both Old and New Testaments have something very, very different to say about that. So when I said, how do you know that? And she thought for a while. She eventually said, well, I guess I don't know that. And that started for my mother really wrestling with, well, what do I believe and what don't I believe and how do I know what I believe and, you know, what can I base things on? And she started reading the scriptures and she started reading the New Testament. She started reading the Gospel of Matthew. And that was this dramatic effect on my mother because Jesus was very different than what she expected him to believe. And he taught, I mean, she had the same experience I had had however many years before. Of, wait a minute, we've been sold a bill of goods that isn't true. We've been told that he was this different, you know, just this nice rabbi who said some nice things about love. But when you start reading what Jesus really claimed about himself and what he really said about eternal life and about knowing God, I mean, it's really, it's either really, really different and good and dramatic or it's crazy. So I think my mother resonated with that same C.S. Lewis quote that I resonated with, that if, you know, given what Jesus said, he was either a lunatic on the level of a person who calls himself a poached egg, or he's God himself. He's the promised Messiah. So my mother at age 75 became a believer and got baptized by my brother. How's that for a crazy, that's another crazy story.
Wow, all in the family.
Yeah.
Wow. So that whole idea of asking a simple question that provoked thought, that led to investigation, that resulted in eternal life. It's beautiful. So the book is called Questioning Evangelism.
Right. It's the whole idea of asking questions, answering questions with questions, engaging people in the thinking process, helping people question what they believe or why they believe it. It's all that kind of stuff. And yeah, what I tried to do in the book was give people an idea of how they can go about engaging people in these kinds of dialogues. And so I talk about the importance of questions. And then I tried to kind of sort of spell it out of what it could look like related to the common questions that people are asking today. Why do Christians think theirs is the only right way? Why does a good God allow evil and suffering? Why should we believe the Bible? Those kind of things. And so I show this sort of rabbinic style of conversation, what it could look like and sound like related to those topics.
Very good. And again, folks, if you've just tuned in, this is Jesus Made Me Kosher. We're interviewing Randy Newman from Campus Crusade, now called Crew. He's a teacher, an author, and a very much in-demand speaker. And now, Randy, since that time, you've written another book more recently. I've got my copy in my hot little hands right here, Bringing the Gospel Home, Witnessing to Family Members, Close Friends, and Others Who Know You Well. And I guess there's the rub. They know us well. We can't pull the wool over anybody's eyes. But tell us about your purpose in writing this book, Bringing the Gospel Home, and how it's designed to help a follower of Yeshua to reach, you know, honestly, the most difficult group of all, one's own family and close circle of friends.
Yeah. By the way, when I first proposed the subtitle to the publisher, Witnessing to Family, Close Friends, and Others You Can't Fool. But they turned it down. They went for the more tame, you know, and Others Who Know You Well. I was a little disappointed. But anyway.
Don't feel bad, Randy. I just got roasted, and my father was one of the roasters. Don't feel bad.
Oh my. Wow, that's a scary thought.
I'll tell you about it at the next in-gathering. We'll have another late night.
Did you volunteer for that?
Believe it or not, I did, but it was for a very good cause.
I hope so. Certainly not for building your self-esteem. Anyway, so, well, here's the thing. I've done a lot of speaking and teaching at churches and on campus groups about how to witness and how to share the good news. And after a while, it started being the number one question that came up every single time was, okay, this is helpful, Randy, but how do I witness to my father or my brother or my son? I mean, it was, and the stories attached to it were these these pretty painful, I mean, deep emotional things. You know, this is helpful, Randy, but what do I tell my father? He's an atheist, or my sister, she's a lesbian, or my son, he's on drugs, or, I mean, the stories were almost always accompanied with tears. And so I started researching to find out what was written about, you know, witnessing the family, and I didn't find a whole lot. And then I thought, well, maybe there's nothing different about it. Maybe it's just like witnessing to anybody else. But then I thought, no, that's not right. So I started interviewing a bunch of people who had had experiences of witnessing to family, both positive and negative, successful, unsuccessful, the whole wide range. And I put together some thoughts in this book to try to encourage people and to offer people hope. It might take a long time. It might be a much more comprehensive conversation other than just believe this so you can go to heaven. But it can really be a great opportunity to express love and compassion for people that we very often just sort of assume those things.
Mm. Well, let me ask you this. We're just about out of time, but if you could take a minute or so, and what would you say, you know, here we are in the Metro Detroit area. There's something like 60 to somewhere between 60 and 70,000 Jewish people in the Metro Detroit area. We happen to know that some listen to this show, even who aren't yet believers. What would you say to some of our Jewish listeners to Jesus Made Me Kosher who aren't yet believers?
I'm thrilled that you're listening and that you're having the dialogue, even if it's only in your own head. So check out and find out who Jesus really was, what he said about himself, what the scriptures teach about his coming when they were predicting, and then what actually did happen that's recorded in the New Testament. Find out for yourself. It's a wonderful discovery. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, hear, well, this is what I've been told I'm supposed to believe, and this is what the rabbis want me to believe. But what do you really believe for yourself? And there's some good answers out there.
I appreciate that.
Answer I'd give.
I appreciate that. You know, one of the things I've always maintained is that, you know, if we were in a courtroom and somebody was impaneled on a jury on a very important case, but that juror just was not willing to come into the courtroom and actually hear the case, view the evidence, look at the exhibits, and yet still wanted to render a verdict. I mean, they're not going to last very long on a jury. To make a legitimate decision about something that's important, it's important that we be willing to come into the courtroom, as it were, see the evidence, hear the case being made, and then render an informed decision, an informed verdict. That's kind of how I approach that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's another dynamic. Do I have another minute?
Yes, you do.
God has always had a very, very special place in his heart and his plan for the Jewish people. And as a result, the number one enemy of God, Hasatan, the devil, has had a very special place in his heart and his plan for the Jewish people, and he hates the Jewish people. And the devil has always wanted to crank up the animosity, because if he can do damage to the Jewish people, it's a way of sort of doing damage to God, or so he thinks. And so it would make sense that the devil would want to keep this message of God's Messiah a secret. If God really did send the Messiah in the person of Yeshua, it would make sense that there would be forces that would want to keep this unknown or distorted or mixed up and confused. So it's not just objectively studying something. It is certainly that. But you're entering into a charged atmosphere. And I think it's important for people to realize that.
Oh, I appreciate that so much, Randy. I do. Well, folks, again, we've been talking with Randy Newman, nationally known speaker with Campus Crusade or CRU. And folks, the book Bringing the Gospel Home is available. It's on Crossway Books. Recommend that you pick up a copy of that. And you can learn more about Randy's ministry at Randy David Newman, all one word, randydavidnewman.com. So, Randy, thank you so much for being with us today. Sure appreciate your time. And folks, we thank you for listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. God willing, we'll be back with you again the same time tomorrow. So on behalf of me and everybody at Congregation Shema Yisrael, Yisrael. We want to say Shalom, y'all.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.